it was just assumed when schools were closed that when they reopened, children would just skip happily back into school. But in fact, we were kind of demanding from them a resilience, which it turns out they were unable to give many of them. And many have had long-term damage because of absence from schools. And this shows in the so-called ghost children, the children that are just dropped off the school rolls.
Coming up on British Thought Leaders, journalist and author Harriet Sargent. Harriet talks about her investigation into the children who never returned to school after the lockdowns.
There's the children that are just too anxious to leave their room, too depressed, won't come out of the room. And then there's the children that you can't get back into the house. You can't get back into their rooms because they're so angry and aggressive. They're out on the street, they're joining gangs, and they've just dropped out completely.
Harriet says even when they're found, it's difficult to get these children back into school.
Somebody told a teacher, and she managed to coax him back into school. But then he got so angry, and this is typical of a lot of children I interviewed, because he'd missed so much. So he felt like a complete idiot because he had no idea what was going on. And he left and hasn't been seen again.
Welcome to British Thought Leaders, I'm Lee Hall. Today I'm sitting down with author and journalist Harriet Sargent. Harriet, thanks for joining us.
That's a pleasure.
So you've been investigating this phenomenon of ghost children, which is children who didn't go back to school after the lockdowns. Could you start by giving us an introduction and some figures? I mean, how many children were severely absent before the lockdowns and where are we at now?
Yeah, I mean, this is an extraordinary situation that's developed. Everybody was concentrating on the elderly, and it was just assumed when schools were closed that when they reopened, children would just skip happily back into school. But in fact, we were kind of demanding from them a resilience, which it turns out they were unable to give many of them. And many have had long-term damage because of absence from schools. And this shows in the so-called ghost children, the children that are just dropped off the school rolls. So before lockdown, there was a level figure of about 60,000 who were persistently absent from school. But after lockdown, it's leapt up to 140,000.
Wow.
So this whole issue was highlighted by the Centre for Social Justice, and they did a really important report called Lost and Not Found. And they did the figures that showed, you know, what a major problem this is.
So where are they?
Well, I spoke to a school counsellor, and he said that his children that are absent fall into two groups. There's the children that are just too anxious to leave their room, too depressed, won't come out of the room. And then there's the children that you can't get back into the house. You can't get back into their rooms because they're so angry and aggressive. They're out on the street, they're joining gangs, and they've just dropped out completely. And this is really bad. Because, as I know, because I befriended a gang about 15 years ago, so I know that there are always kids that drop out of school. I mean, all the boys that I got to know dropped out of school at 14. But equally, I've seen what's happened to them, and they have just been over the last, they're now early 30s, in and out of prison ever since, at great cost to themselves and to society. And this is what lies in wait for these young kids that are on the streets. This is the fate that awaits these young kids, because not being in school is crucial for your life chances. 90% of young offenders played truant,
right,
and 60% of prisoners altogether played truant. So it's really vital this doesn't happen and that these young kids have got back into school.
Why do you think the numbers keep rising? Because as we get further away from the pandemic, I assumed it would start going down again.
Well, at the moment, that doesn't seem to have happened. And I think because we're dealing with this cohort. I mean, I keep on talking to parents. I mean, I don't know if you've had this experience. And they will suddenly get really upset about their children. They might be in complete control of their lives. And then you will find out that they've got children of about 15 or 16 and who are in lockdown, whatever they were, 10 or whatever, and have not got over it, and that they are having to deal with the aftermath of lockdown still. I remember talking to one young girl, and she's at a pretty good school, comprehensive, leafy suburb, and she said she remembered a boy, he vanished from school during lockdown. And after they all went back to school, he suddenly reappeared by the local shopping mall, sitting on a sort of dirty piece of cardboard. And she said, you know, he looked kind of homeless, and we were all very shocked to see him there. And because he'd always been popular, kids would bring him food, even give him money, and even some items of clothing. And so finally somebody told a teacher, and she managed to coax him back into school. But then he got so angry, and this is typical of a lot of children I interviewed, because he'd missed so much. Mm. So he felt like a complete idiot because he had no idea what was going on. And he left and hasn't been seen again.
Do you think it is possible or likely for these ghost children to get back on track? Because it sounds like he didn't manage it at all.
Well, it's very difficult. I mean, and it's, first of all, we know it's most deprived children. You'd expect that. Again, I interviewed a lot of young children, mostly African, in the East End of London. And they had all dropped out of school and were not coming back. And I said to them, I thought, well, maybe they were in gangs or what was their problem? And they looked at me, there's about five or six of them, as if I was mad. And they said, no, the reason that they hadn't gone into school was childcare. Because their mothers were cleaners, were whatever, important workers. And they were all the oldest sons. And there was about four or five kids. And they had to stay at home looking after their younger siblings. And this had kind of traumatized them. First of all, they were very attached to their younger siblings, so they didn't want to leave them and they didn't want to go back into school. And anyway, again, they'd missed so much.
So this is obviously not just about the children, but also the families and the culture of the families. What are their reasons?
Well, I'm talking about, so far I've only mentioned sort of the really deprived children, but it's not just deprived children. I mean, it's also middle-class kids. There was a teacher at a very nice school, again, leafy suburb, comprehensive, very good school, an all-girls school. And she said that the mental health issues amongst her girls was just another pandemic in itself. And she said that 30% of the girls in her school were only coming in intermittently. So they would come in just for the morning and then they'd go back home in the afternoon or vice versa, because they were just so anxious and distressed by the whole thing. And she said 30 of the girls had vanished for good and two had killed themselves. And she said these were girls with very good prospects. They were expected to go to university. They were expected to do well. And she said their life chances have just been diminished.
So this isn't nothing that's just affecting poorer children. You think it's going right through the classes?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there was one boy I interviewed, again, from a nice, very good background, nice school that he went to, and really very driven, very bright boy, very driven, and very competitive. And he was about 14, 15. And so when lockdown first happened, he said, fine, I'll smash this, you know, it'll be fine. And he started sending in all his work. But his whole mood changed because his work was never marked. A term went past, his work was never marked. So all that competitive, you know, he said when something bit of work came back, he was comparing it to his friends and they were seeing who'd got the most. All of that went. And he described so vividly to me how he gradually went down, I don't know how you'd say, sort of down into this deep depression, down a kind of plug hole. And he just lost all enjoyment in life. He started listening to really angry grime music. And he was really angry. He said he used to listen to that occasionally, but now he's listening it all the time. And finally, he had very supportive parents who could afford to, for him to have counselling. And so now he's, but it's taken a long time, but he's got back to being himself again. But I think in all of this, what really shocked me when these kids were telling me this was the enormous variety in schools. I mean, you had one, and it wasn't just schools between schools, but actually within the schools. I mean, one girl told me that she had sort of a brilliant maths teacher who was always checking up on her, always there, always marked the homework, whereas her geography teacher she never heard or saw of the whole time. And I talked to a headmaster who was excellent. He actually had been in France and they had seen that lockdown was coming, had rushed back to his school, got the whole thing fixed up so everybody had some kind of, you know, IT. And so when lockdown happened, within sort of 24 hours, he'd set up a whole system. So the kids were had to put their work in, I think by, I can't remember now, 1 o'clock. And then he had people marking the work, because that was crucial, marking the work. So the kids got back the marked work by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And there was a whole, you know, it was all set up. And he told me he didn't lose one single child. So that's how important that kind of support was. But on the other hand, there was a headmaster, I think in Essex, who openly boasted that none of his kids were doing online work and that all he was doing was telling them to help out at the weekend, maybe doing some cooking, maybe helping the Sunday lunch. That was it. And I want to know, where was the Department of Education in all of this? You know, why weren't they checking out on these children, checking out on the schools, and making sure that everybody had the support and the work that they were supposed to have?
So what is the government doing? Are they doing enough?
I think it's very difficult because they don't seem... It's very difficult to reach these children. I mean, I know from the gang members that I befriended, that once these kids have kind of got out onto the street, nobody is actually responsible for them. It's quite extraordinary. And you don't hear from them. The authorities don't hear from them or see them again till they're 18 and have gone to prison. That's the first time they come across them, which is pretty horrific. But the other thing, you know, we've been talking about older children, but this was something that also happened to very young children. For example, a lot of teachers, nursery school teachers and primary school teachers, have been very quick to blame parents for the fact that there's suddenly, at the end of the pandemic, all these children were turning up in nappies for their reception at primary school, dummies in their mouth, unable to speak, not potty trained, unable even to hang their coats up when they arrived. And so, you know, you think, oh my goodness, how dreadful. And then you go and talk to the parents themselves. And it was really heartbreaking because many of the mothers and many had had their babies just during lockdown. Right. And it was quite frightening, especially mothers who it's the first time, their first child. Because usually there's an enormous amount of help around a new mother. There's health visitors who are popping in, weighing the baby. There's mother and baby groups where they can go along and chat to other mothers and compare what their babies are all doing. And all of this just, and GPs, the other thing. I mean, all of this suddenly vanished. And again, I spoke to young mothers who said, we had nowhere to go. You know, I had no idea if my baby was putting on enough weight, what its milestones should have been, whether what it was doing was normal or not. And sort of the only way was rushing off to A&E. And one young mother, told me she'd got to A&E. She'd had, I think, 2 or 3 babies very quickly during lockdown. And she'd gone to A&E and then was called by the social worker. And as the social worker was interviewing her, the social worker discovered that this young mother had 2 children that no one knew about. It was just completely off the records. So that was a that's a, another problem, and the their distress, and the trouble is that, I mean, a number of psychologists told me that the trouble is with very young children, they can't kind of, a one-year-old or a two-year-old can't exist on its own. It takes, its sort of weather pattern is its mother's weather pattern. So if it's stuck in a flat with a very nervous, depressed, anxious mother, it's going to arrive at school very clingy and difficult. And then just being away from the mother, because they'd been so sort of closeted, and they hadn't even gone to see relatives or anything at all. One primary school teacher said that she had twins in reception, and that every morning they both vomited. Well, you can imagine this really began the morning well for this poor teacher. And she was thinking, why are they vomiting? You know, what's wrong with them? They're not ill, what is it? And then she realised the poor little things had been cloistered with their mother, and suddenly the mother's back at work and they're in school and they're barely seeing the mother, and they were completely discombobulated.
I mean, when the pandemic happened, we closed the schools and there were these measures like you've discussed. It was really a virus that didn't affect children that much at all. Mm. The policies were obviously aimed at protecting the elderly. Mm. I mean, do you think we let our children down during that time?
Oh, I think we did terribly. We only thought about the old people. No thought was given. I mean, nothing was done to try and find out whether children, first of all, needed to be locked down when it didn't affect them. Teachers' unions, I don't know if you remember, were completely hysterical. I mean, I think the head of the teachers' union was quoted. She just made the most awful remarks about children snivelling and snotty and you don't want them anywhere near you, which I thought rather betrayed what her feelings for children. And the teachers insisted, the teacher unions insisted on keeping the schools closed way after it was necessary, and inflicting all this damage on young children. But equally, the government did nothing to try and measure what this was going to do. There was no, oh, well, let's try and get some idea what closing schools are going to do to young kids. Nothing. Nothing was done about that. And there was so much damage done to children who, there was a whole new cohort of children they discovered, which is just about coping families and children, and who were just about coping because their children went to school every day. And suddenly those children were just stuck at home. And I interviewed a number of kids who said, you know, one I remember, and he said that he didn't really get on with his stepfather, but it was just okay because his mother had always arranged a huge amount of activities, so holidays, he was doing football, this, that, and the other. And of course, all that went. So he and his stepfather were stuck together in a small flat, and it was just explosive. And in the end, you know, he ran away and he sort of dropped out completely. So, no, I don't think the government gave any attention to any of this.
The idea that we could just close schools for a year and your children will be fine and they'll just bounce back afterwards and they're so resilient. I mean, it seems naive when we look back at it. I mean, how do we get it so wrong?
Well, because we didn't do, there was no attempt to listen, I think, to people who warned that this might well happen, but no attempt to do any research, to kind of do any programming, you know, trying to look at what the impact might be. I mean, Sweden, I think, barely closed its schools. It kept going, didn't raise the death rate, and its children have bounced back, you know, pretty much fine. We have that's completely self-afflicted this damage on our children. And I think it's shocking.
What do you think the long-term consequences of all this will be?
Well, I think we're already seeing, which is the huge impact on mental health. You know, there's so many children now are suffering from mental health problems. And also that there's so many young people just disengaging. And this is, as I said earlier, I mean, this is at huge cost to society, to the young people, but also to society. So at the moment, you know, there's 1 in 10 people on disability benefit. I mean, we can't have our young people just simply checking out of life. apart from anything else, I need them there earning my pension. So it's a huge cost to them, to these poor young people, and to the rest of society.
What do you think we can do?
I think we have to look at what they need now, which is perhaps actually asking them what they need, and also providing some education. Because at the moment, if you miss out on your education at school, you've missed out. And it's very difficult to get them back in again, because over and over again, they told me, yes, we went back to school, but we couldn't cope. I mean, this is many of the young girls at that school I mentioned. One of the big problems is they'd go back into school. They'd manage to be coaxed back into school. But then they couldn't do the work. So they felt completely stupid and useless and hopeless. So there must be some way that if they go back into school, you can put them back a few years without them feeling completely hurt, so that they can catch up.
Do you feel we've learned our lessons? If this was to happen again, do you think we would do better?
I hope so. But the trouble is, as we now see, we got into such a panic, and everybody was saying, all the unions, so many people were saying, oh, lockdown, lockdown, lockdown. We have to lock down hard. We have to lock down longer. And that was such a loud, compelling voice. And people who said, well, no, I think this is a bad idea, were all looked on as a bit of a nutters. So I think we mustn't be driven. We tend to be driven by the sort of majority screaming and shouting and stamping their feet. Perhaps we should have listened to the nutters a bit more.
All right, Sergeant, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.